Friday, January the 6th. The Hurd affair is still going full blast. A picture and story in the Evening Star, and I do not know what all else. This one gave our reasons for turning it down. Too large for the official portrait. The Capitol so brilliantly lighted as to be inappropriate. One story said he was sorry he flunked the test. But if number of inches of publicity is any criterion, he gets an A. In the morning, I had an interview with Bernard Garfinkel, who is doing a book, When I Was 16, interviewing various people. Marian Anderson, Helen Hayes, Margaret Mead, and I, among them.
And I reminisced
in a rambling fashion about that year of bloom, a long, long way from the brick house in St. Mary's to the Queen's sitting room at the White House. Then I had lunch in my bedroom with Linda. She's back at work at McCall's. We'll be spending much of next week in New York, and then soon to California on a story. At 4, I had tea with Dylan Ripley and Jim Ketchum in the library. He had brought with him the long-expected Aiken from Joseph Hirshhorn, the little girl with the pink bow in her hair and the pouting look. He and Jim had tried it various places, fallen in love with it above the mantel in the library, and there it hung, very much at home, her bow a bright spot of color between the rows of books, the unflinching realism of her face, reminiscent somehow to me of the Flemish paintings. I liked it very much. You couldn't call it pretty, but it was great quality. I was so proud. We talked about the Tate painting. Dylan thinks he's a great painter. And it's a good picture. He likes it, he says. But it's big and hard to place, and the house is already well stocked with the Hudson River School, of which this is reminiscent. It was a pleasant half hour over teacups and watching the fire with a very charming gentleman, but slightly marred for me by thinking of one of his assistants who's been interviewed on TV and in the newspaper these last couple of days. About what a superior artist Hurd is. It looks a bit like he's going out of his way. Back upstairs, I worked at my desk, called Joe Hirshhorn to thank him for the painting. I had the easiest, most spontaneous feeling of friendship for him. He's an ebullient, charming, utterly natural person, although I'm quite sure he can be tough. I hope that next spring will give me one day to go with Abe to his place in Connecticut. Then I went to the bowling alley, shot a poor game, just for the exercise, and back upstairs to get ready to go out to dinner. This is being a most remarkable week for us. We never go out at all. And here this week, we've gone to the Bill White's on Wednesday, Muriel and Hubert's on Thursday, and tonight to Ambassador and Mrs. Harriman's, a dinner in honor of the Secretary of State and Mrs. Rusk. Black tie. Fortunately, Lyndon accepted before he found that out. Jean-Louis did my hair up in a rather elegant Greek fashion, and I wore my most understated dress, yellow silk with long sleeves. Molly Parnas, I believe. It really puts an obligation on me. There was a story in the paper right after the New Year that I had been chosen among the 12 top best-dressed women. All I can say is either Molly Parnas or Adele Simpson or both must have worked hard on it. And maybe Eleanor Lambert collaborated. And I shall strive a bit to live up to it. Delightfully, charmingly, Lucy Baines had been listed as a runner-up among the most popular, or most loved, I'm not sure just what the title is, women. And here she is, only 19. I have no illusions about me. I don't belong there. I think she has a rare quality that entitles her to it. So I felt very elegant when I walked out with Lyndon, about 12. And we went to the Harriman's house in Georgetown, a beautiful house full of their treasures of many years of art gathering. Averill came walking swiftly to the front to meet us, and as Lyndon leaned over to pick up his seating chart, Averill explained that he was the dean and I was Mrs. Sevilla Sacasa. Not a soul at the party knew we were coming except Averill and Marie. Averill said, "You see, this just shows that if two people want to keep something secret, they can. They just don't tell anybody else." So in we walked, and it was really hilarious. The first person I saw was Herb Block, and the expression on his face was a study. Unfortunately, I couldn't quite enjoy it thoroughly because I had not seen his cartoon this morning about Lyndon and the Hurd portrait. Everybody else, it seemed, had, and they were in stitches. Two of my favorite Senate couples, Mike and Mary Ellen Monroney, and Senator and Mrs. John Sherman Cooper were there, and I had a chance to talk with them about the format we should use for the parties for the House and Senate this year. Mary Lynn rather surprised me by saying she thought they would rather just visit. Senator Joe Clark was there without his wife, Noelle. No one mentioned whether there was a divorce, separation, or whatever. The Lincoln Gordons, the Siscos from the State Department, the Walt Rostows. I thank the Lord for him very often, and for her, too. Jean and Bob Kintner, she full of the news that her daughter and son-in-law were coming back from Africa in the Peace Corps next week. Bill and Judith Moyers, she looking very lovely in a dress just right for a harem, I thought. The Johnny Walkers, such a dear man. And Clark and Marnie Clifford, she looked so elegant in black velvet that I went up to her and whispered, "You ought to have your portrait painted in that." And we both burst into giggles. Stu Alsop alone, his wife, is having a baby. And that most in woman in town, so the papers say, and I can't think of anyone I'd rather have the title. Mrs. Nicholas Longworth, full of nice talk about Linda Bird at the Capote party. It was a very interesting, delightful group. It couldn't have been planned more for my enjoyment, though it was all for the Russ. They look remarkably serene in the face of all the burdens they carry, benign and strong, and they are certainly people I thank the Lord for every day. Dinner was at round tables, and I sat on Averill's right, and next to me was Mike Monroney. Georgetown party is a special phrase in this town, and I think this must have been the very essence, the best of the best of these. Though I'm no judge, I have small claim to having been to many. The food was delicious. But the high point, as it should be, was the toast. Averill said to me during dinner, "You don't think the president will mind, do you, if I talk about how he planned all this to bring together the people who had worked on the portrait?" What could I say? I think he's heard all he wants to about that portrait, I had to say. But actually, it was hilarious how many there were. And Averill, in the beginning of his toast, mentioned them all. Alice Longworth, I'd been to see her portrait, if I heard before I decided. Johnny Walker, whom Averill said had advised me to have it done by Hurd, he hadn't. I'd cast that die. He'd simply said he was a good artist. Clark Clifford of the Historical Society, who'd paid for it and then returned it. Herb Block, who'd drawn the really funny but painful cartoon about it. How could you possibly pass up the subject in a toast? He did it amusingly. And then he went on to some warm and glowing and very, very appropriate remarks about the guest of honor, the Secretary of State, and then asked us to drink to the President. And then Dean stood up, and anything after that would have been anticlimax. He was superb. I promised myself I would do my best in the years to come to get him to the Lyndon Johnson School of Public Service in whatever capacity I could, as occasional visiting lecturer, or hopefully as more. He outlined the United States role in the world today and the president's role in a way so graphic, so clear, so compelling that I didn't know whether I wanted to cry or shout. And so I clapped. And I was uncertain that this was going to happen. Lyndon got up to respond to our host. I was never more proud of him. These last few days, few weeks, he's had every reason in the world to make him acerbic or bitter or silent. He was quiet and articulate and sweet. He talked about the Harrimans and the things they had done for our government and for people in it. The many jobs, great titles and not so great titles, that he had held with equal credit. It was to their house that Mrs. Kennedy had come after the tragedy in November 63. Now, in a happier time, they had welcomed the whole diplomatic corps to meet Lucy for her wedding festivities last August. And this dinner for his chief, the Secretary of State, how much more he could have added. The monument to FDR, the Whistler in the White House, so many wonderful things they've done. It was a totally delightful evening. The ladies had coffee in one parlor, and I had a chance to hear Marie tell how a large part of their art collection, which they had left to the state of New York in the governor's mansion, had been destroyed by a fire, while their successors, the Nelson Rockefellers, lived there. We said goodnight early and were home a little past 11, and in bed with a night reading by 11:30.